We're going to take a look at William McKenzie and how he, in order to become Marina's manager, resigned from Wynn, Jaffe, and Tinsley and went to work as a law partner with a fellow named Pete White. Now, Pete White had been an assistant district attorney with William McKenzie. He had helped clear Jack Ruby on an earlier gun charge in 1954, and we're going to take a look at the association between Pete White and William McKenzie. It's worth noting that Pete White's address and phone number were in the notebook of Ruby's assistant, a guy named Larry Crawford, C-R-A-F-A-R-D. And we're going to take a look at Pete White, his association with Ruby, his association with William McKenzie, the former Wynn Jaffe Tinsley attorney who became Marina's manager after James Martin was fired. And Pete White, interestingly enough, had previously been the law partner in 1962 of a fellow named Ivan Irvin and his son Ivan Irvins Jr., and though the Irvins were very much connected with the Hunt family, H.L. Hunt and Nelson Bunker Hunt. Irvin Sr. had worked as a publicity man, as a Hunt, H.L. Hunt employee. He had also represented Nelson Bunker Hunt in connection with the Wanted for Treason ad that appeared in the Dallas Morning News on 11-22-63. We're going to take a look at a guy named Larry Schmidt of an organization called CUSA. He was brought over to the Dallas-Fort Worth area from Germany. He worked in conjunction with Edwin Walker, Major General Edwin Walker, who we've looked at, and the Hunt family. And it was his CUSA organization which raised the ruckus, the non-lethal attack on Adlai Stevenson, which served as the pretext for recruiting extra security for President Kennedy's trip to Dallas, including apparently Army intelligence and Army Reserve intelligence people who were involved in the assassination. Interestingly enough, the only person arrested from Larry Schmidt's CUSA organization in the Stevenson attack was a guy named Robert Hatfield. Robert Hatfield was represented by Pete White. It should be noted that the Nelson Bunker Hunt ad, which Ivan Irvin, the former law partner of Pete White, represented Nelson Bunker Hunt in connection with, was paid for by Larry Schmidt. It's worth noting that one of Schmidt's top assistants was a guy named Warren Carroll, a former CIA man who was also associated with H.L. Hunt, and the public relations work for CUSA. And by the way, Larry Schmidt was involved with some very powerful people, including former Joe McCarthy aide Robert Morris, a key member of the American Security Council that we looked at in our first couple of installments. It should be noted that the PR work for Larry Schmidt was handled by the Bedford Wynn public relations firm. Now, the reason we're taking a look at this step up in the hierarchical functions of this White Russian petroleum Galen-related liberation milieu is to begin seeing these operational elements in the context of the macro-political and macroeconomic, the context in which they function. We're going to take a look at the elements that they worked with, the elements that they represented, and what we look at here in this particular section. By the way, we're going to be relying very heavily tonight on two magnificent manuscripts by Peter Dale Scott, both the Dallas Conspiracy and Government Documents in the JFK Assassination, and we're going to see how this rollback or liberation milieu, a synthesis of organized crime, the intelligence community, the petroleum community, the American far right, the petroleum industry, the American far right, and some of these Galen-related imports, began functioning in the context of and at the behest of powerful corporate interests. That's why we're taking a look at how this milieu functioned in conjunction with the Great Southwest Corporation. Great Southwest, again, a joint Wynn-Rockefeller operation. After that, we're going to dolly back still more, and we're going to get a wider angle shot, and we're going to take a look at some of the many connections between a fellow named Robert Anderson, whom LBJ phoned just after John Kennedy's assassination, the many connections of Robert Anderson to the forces that were controlling the lives of Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby. Robert Anderson was a powerful oil industry lobbyist, was appointed by President Eisenhower to be Secretary of the Treasury. He has never been directly linked with the assassination, and I want to underscore that, but he was very close to LBJ. LBJ phoned him right after the assassination, perhaps in conjunction with it, and by looking at the numerous connecting links of Robert Anderson and LBJ, Robert Anderson, an associate of LBJ, to the forces that were controlling Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby, we will get yet a wider angle shot of the powerful political and corporate forces that were at work in this coup of 11-22-63, and that coup ultimately represented the triumph of rollback or liberation theory over containment theory. This next section is going to be very, very complicated because we're going to look at a staggering degree of capital overlapping capital participation and interlocking directorates between a number of different powerful corporate interests. We're going to take a look at the Wagner estate, that's W-A-G-G-O-N-E-R, of Dallas-Fort Worth. We're going to take a look, that was from Vernon, Texas, at the First National Bank of Dallas-Fort Worth. Two major defense contractors, one of them the LTV Corporation, the Ling Temco Vought Corporation, and General Dynamics. We're going to return to Dresser Industries, one of whose subsidiaries, Idaco, served as an apparent cover for George Bush. Certainly he was employed by Idaco, a subsidiary of Dresser Industries, and in that context he was helping to operate behind the Iron Curtain and to hustle Idaco's operations behind the Iron Curtain. And we will return once again to an essay called In the Company of Friends from the current issue of Covert Action Information Bulletin and take a look at Dresser Industries and interlocking directorates between Dresser Industries, actually not interlocking directorate, but we're going to take a look at how the chairman of the board of Dresser Industries, a fellow named Henry Mallon, a close friend of George Bush's father, Prescott Sr., it was Henry Mallon who got George Bush his job with Idaco of Dresser Industries. One of the directors on that board was none other than Lewis McNaughton of DeGolyer and McNaughton. That is one of the major elements that we've been looking at in connection with the White Russian Galen Petroleum Intelligence Milieu, this rollback or liberation milieu that we've been focusing on for these many weeks. Again, Lewis McNaughton, who we looked at in our second installment, Lewis McNaughton was a director of Dresser Industries with Henry Neal Mallon. A couple of the other powerful corporate interests that we're going to be looking at as we once again dolly out, we're going to be taking a look at companies associated with the Loeb Roads operation. We're going to take a look again at the Great Southwest Corporation. Now, this section of the Dallas conspiracy by Peter Dale Scott will seem, I suspect, will be very confusing. I'm not going to run down all of these connections in all of their detail. Suffice it to say that the dizzying overlap between capital participants and people who were used at the operational level in one way or another in the events of 11-22-63, the interlocking directorates that we're going to look at, will hopefully serve to illustrate the powerful interests, the overlapping corporate and political and national security interests, which were directing this particular liberation milieu, this rollback milieu that we're looking at. And it was at the behest of these interests and on behalf of these interests that the demand, the operational elements which we began looking at, were operating. Following that, we're going to dolly back still further, and having looked at the overlapping capital participation and interlocking directorates of many of the elements that controlled the lives of Jack Ruby, again, this by way of seeing the operational events of 11-22-63 within the macro-political and macroeconomic context in which they existed, we're going to dolly back still further, and we're going to take a look at how President Kennedy, the reversal of much of President Kennedy's policies by LBJ, not only helped to benefit some of the defense industries that we've touched on, such as General Dynamics and LTV, Ling Temco Vought, but we're going to take a look in particular at some of the most powerful corporate interests in America and how they were direct beneficiaries of the reversal of President Kennedy's Southeast Asia policy by his Vietnam policy by Lyndon Johnson. Specifically, we're going to take a look at Saucony Mobile Oil, and a mobile lobbyist, Southeast Asian lobbyist named William Henderson, and how he was a vocal spokesman for escalation of the Vietnam War, not the withdrawal that was being effected by President Kennedy before his assassination. And we're going to take a look at an address, an impassioned address for Vietnamese escalation that he gave at an organization called, at an address of sponsored by the Association for Asian Studies. Now, this particular body of corporate academicians, many of whom, as we will see, had strong backgrounds in the intelligence community, this operates on behalf and intersects with some of the most powerful corporate interests in the United States. We're going to be taking a look again as we began bringing the Rockefellers into focus with our look at the Great Southwest Corporation. That'll be the second major installment from the Peter Dale Scott manuscripts. We're going to take a look at the Rockefeller operations in a big way as we take a look at Saucony Mobile, now known as Mobil Oil, and interlocking directorates with a number of major corporations, including IBM and General Dynamics. We're going to be taking a look at people like Alan Dulles, the corporate lawyer and a veteran U.S. intelligence operator who helped to forge the Christian West concept. We're going to take a look at Grayson Kirk, the president of Columbia University. And with this particular section of the discussion this evening, we will be taking a look at the highest level of the corporate echelon, I guess one could say, and how it benefited from the events of 11-22-63. And this will complete our dollying back. We will, again, begin by taking a look at how the rollback or liberation milieu, this White Russian Galen Petroleum Intelligence milieu, functioned at the operational level in Dealey Plaza in conjunction with elements of Army intelligence and Army Reserve intelligence. And then we're going to dolly back a bit, take a look at the Great Southwest Corporation, how these same elements functioned in connection with that. And with the Great Southwest Corporation element of tonight's discussion, we're going to see how the synthesis of the radical right, this Galen milieu, petroleum industry, intelligence, how this begins to function in conjunction with and on behalf of more powerful corporate interests. And again, Great Southwest, a joint win Rockefeller operation. We will dolly out still further and take a look at the dizzying tangle of intersections around Robert Anderson, whom LBJ phoned just after the JFK assassination. We're going to take a look at a broader angle shot of the corporate and political forces that were at work to destroy President Kennedy on 11-22-63, on whose behalf this rollback or liberation milieu was functioning. And again, we will conclude by taking a look, we will conclude our examination of the Scott material by taking a look at some of the most powerful corporate interests in the United States. And yet again, even though we will be dollying back and looking at a much higher level of the corporate echelon, yet again the presence, omnipresence of the intelligence community will be quite evident here. We will be taking a look at major corporate operators such as Alan Dulles and others, and yet many of these academicians who presented papers at the Association for Asian Societies, bankrolled by, among others, the Rockefeller family and IBM. We're going to take a look at how many of these academicians had strong intelligence backgrounds. So even though we will be dollying back, and we will begin looking, raising the camera, so to speak, from the streets of Dealey Plaza in Dallas, Texas on 11-22-63, we will switch from Dealey Plaza to Wall Street. We will dolly back and see the larger forces that were at work. At the same time, we will remain with the intelligence community operating in conjunction with this milieu. Following that, we're going to touch on an interesting detail, possibly significant, possibly irrelevant, namely the connection between Michael Payne, one of the individuals introduced to the Oswalds, who, along with his wife Ruth, were babysitters for the Oswald family. We're going to take a look at his work for Bell Helicopter. He was one of the major R&D people with Bell Helicopter, in charge of R&D for Bell Aerospace, of which, obviously, Bell Helicopter was part, was none other than Walter Dornberger. And we took a look at Walter Dornberger, the military commander of Peenemünde Nordhausen, in last week's installment, and how he helped to play a role in creating the myth of the missile gap, one of the major elements of disinformation provided to the U.S. by the Galen Organization. The British had seen Walter Dornberger as a threat. They felt that he would always be dedicated to the resurrection of a German Reich, and it's interesting that Bell Helicopter benefited enormously from the Vietnam War, which was escalated drastically by Kennedy's assassination. Kennedy was pulling us out. After that, we're going to review again the work of Warren Commission Counsel Wesley Liebler for the Wall Street law firm of Carter, Ledyard, and Milburn, for which Frank Wisner, a key U.S. operative and member of the Wall Street elite, worked. We're also going to take a look at the, quote, suicide, unquote, of a key person involved with editing the publications of the Army's Military Intelligence Service, namely a guy named Garrett Underhill, who identified the culprits in John Kennedy's assassination as a CIA faction involved with gun running and drug trafficking. And we will also take a look at the participation on the Warren Commission of Alan Dulles and John J. McCloy. And interestingly enough, we will conclude this evening by taking a look at the role of none other than good old Frank Wisner, the same person who brought the Bandera people into the United States under the auspices of the Office of Policy Coordination. And we're going to take a look at his role in helping to rebut an article in the London Times by Hugh Trevor Roper, which pointed out the obvious fallacies in the Warren Report. So Frank Wisner, 2 years before his, quote, suicide, unquote, even though he was very troubled, he too was working along with some of his old Wall Street OSS and CIA buddies like Alan Dulles to cover up the assassination of John Kennedy. Next week, in the final installment of RFA 37, we're going to take the rollback and liberation milieu all the way up through the Ronald Reagan and Bush administrations, which we will examine in the context of those administrations as the ultimate fulfillment of rollback or liberation theory, and as the ultimate realization of the doctrine that was laid down in NSC 68. So that, in a nutshell, is what we have on tap for this evening. That's why we're going up to midnight. I'm going to take a musical break, and then we will come back with the main substance of tonight's program.